Welcome to the NXT Podcast, your home for weekly NXT reviews and insight.
The beautiful part of NXT is that when one dream ends, another dream begins.
Find all of your NXT news, recaps, and analysis right here. So with that being said, we only have one question for you.
Are you ready?
We thought so. Let's get the show started right now.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the NXT Podcast. It's very good to be back with you. As always, I am your host, Zachary Smith. As you have undoubtedly realized by now, we have a bit of a late edition of the NXT Podcast, recording this here on Saturday afternoon because Thanksgiving happened, and when you work at retail during Thanksgiving, really all that it means is that you work a lot more. So worked it out with Matt and was still able to record this week for you guys, and I'm very happy to do so. We have a pretty good episode of NXT this week. We're on the road to War Games in 2 weeks, so that's going to be our next NXT pay-per-view. It's generally a four-on-four men's match and women's match in a double ring in a cage situation, so that should be a lot of fun. I haven't missed much in the terms of the wrestling world. We had Survivor Series, and as near as I can tell from everybody, Survivor Series was largely an inconsequential and fine to not very good show, except for our main event with Drew McIntyre and Roman Reigns. This comes after Drew won the title back from Randy Orton, making you wonder why Randy won the title in the first place. It kind of felt like they put it on Randy and then realized Survivor Series was coming and realized they liked Drew better as the champion. I talked about that when Drew won. I was very happy to see him win. Drew McIntyre is one of my favorite WWE champions in many, many years. I was very happy when Kofi was the WWE champion, but his reign wasn't the most fun to watch because it felt like they didn't know what to do with him. Or rather, it felt like they didn't do what they needed to do. With Drew, they're doing what they need to do, making him look strong, giving him spotlight, and so he's come across as a great champion. On the other hand, Roman Reigns has been much the same. He's finally turned into the bad guy that we've wanted to see from him for some time. They're doing something different with him, and what do you know? They put the Universal title on him, and nobody's complaining. Imagine that. You change the presentation, and it changes a lot. When fans were clamoring for Roman to turn heel, fans will clamor for somebody to turn heel if their current character is not working. It's not so much that fans think that if you turn a good guy into a bad guy, it makes them interesting, although that is sometimes the case. It's that they want you to tell different stories with that person. For the longest time, WWE was taking the John Cena approach with Roman Reigns, which is, we do not care what you think of him. We are going to keep pushing him as the babyface good guy hero, and we're going to keep doing it and keep doing it until eventually he's not around anymore and you appreciate him for what he is. And the John Cena way of doing things is fine, and people do appreciate John Cena now. I still don't like his promos. I think laughing while somebody else is cutting a promo on you is a childish way to approach every feud and makes it feel less important, but that's certainly one way that you can do it. John Cena is on some people's Mount Rushmores for wrestling. He carried the WWE in an era when they didn't really let anybody else do that, and whether you think that's a good thing or a bad thing, that's up to you. But for the longest time, they were doing that with Roman Reigns. They didn't care what you thought. They were going to keep putting him in these positions. He wins the Royal Rumble. He takes the spot from Daniel Bryan in most fans' eyes. He has matches at WrestleMania with Brock Lesnar, and then he has another feud with Brock. He beats The Undertaker. At that point, he had already lost to Brock Lesnar, so his WrestleMania really meant nothing. After you build somebody as undefeated for a long time and they're no longer undefeated, that's no longer interesting. But he beats The Undertaker. He's constantly put in great positions. He beats Triple H at WrestleMania, and nobody liked it. And now, not only have you turned him to a bad guy and made him a more interesting character, you're telling better stories with him. You've put Paul Heyman, and you've put Jey Uso with him. You've put interesting things around him and allowed him to do more, and that's why it's interesting. And for Drew McIntyre, for the longest time, he was a bad guy who was just kind of aimless. They would put him in different groups. He'd be with Dolph Ziggler or something. He had a feud with Roman Reigns when he came back from his leukemia diagnosis that meant absolutely nothing. It was just a way for Roman to come back. He wins the Royal Rumble against Brock Lesnar, eliminates him, and then he's this big star, goes on to win the title from Brock. And now the Roman Reigns-Drew McIntyre feud is one that I hope we see again. That could be a WrestleMania main event, and if you had gone back just a couple years, I do not think you could have said that. And I think that Roman deserves a lot of credit for that, but I think Drew deserves a lot of credit from that. Before the Royal Rumble, people saw Drew as having a lot of potential that they simply were not using. They just went along with him, didn't give him a lot of character, didn't let him speak a lot. He was put in some important positions, but overall was not a superstar. He wins the title, they clearly get behind him, and they've been presenting him as a superstar. And what do you know? If you present somebody as a superstar, people buy into them as such. And so, that was our one really good match from Survivor Series. So, like I said, I haven't missed too terribly much in terms of the world of wrestling. But I do felt like I have been missing NXT. It felt weird not recording on Thursday like I normally do. Had a great Thanksgiving. I hope that you all did as well. But now I'm ready to be back and recording and talking to you folks about NXT and about the lead up to War Games. Before I jump into that, I should have mentioned you can always find me on Twitter. I am at ZachNXT. That's at ZachNXT. We're always talking about wrestling and other fun things over there. A lot of times I get my news and notes segments from Twitter. So if you want to join in the fun over there, that's where you can find me. So this week for NXT, we're starting with Candice LeRae already in the ring with Indy Hartwell, who was revealed to be one of the two Ghostface. They presented it as if it was a surprise when it absolutely was not. We cut to the announce table. Tonight we're going to have Vic Joseph, Beth Phoenix, and special guest Kevin Owens is back on NXT. It's just really good to hear Kevin's voice on NXT again. He wasn't in NXT for a long time, but he had a huge impact on it. And we have Ember Moon coming out next. Ember's new theme is all right, but it's taken me this long to realize that it's not as good as her old theme, which seems to be the case with a few people that have had their themes changed. Like Keith Lee's is really good now, but it's not what his theme was. It's happened to a few people. Raquel Gonzalez and Dakota Kai show up during this match to distract Ember Moon as we go to break. So with help, Candice LeRae eventually beats Ember Moon. This could have been a really good match, but we're setting up for a women's War Games match as well. So the actual wrestling took a bit of a backseat to the setting up of the different sides. So, you know, we only have so much great stuff in here. I imagine we'll see these two fight down the road and we'll get a better match. But this week was a lot about setting up War Games. So all the women are surrounding Ember Moon, but Ember Moon gets out of the ring and nobody chases her, which allows Toni Storm time to come out. And it looks like Toni Storm's coming out to her aid. They both go to get in the ring, and Ember Moon starts to slide in, but Toni grabs her, throws her into the stairs, and attacks her. Because for some reason, Toni Storm, in this story, would rather help and be friends with the weird mismatched team of women who have all lost their last few big matches. In order, Raquel Gonzalez lost to Rhea Ripley, Candice LeRae lost twice to Io Shirai for the women's title, and Dakota Kai lost to Io for the title as well. So yeah, of the two teams, that's definitely the one that I would want to join, the one that has the terrible track record in big matches and talks a big game but doesn't back it up. Cool, cool. We cut from there to the outside where Undisputed Era are arriving to the building. Before they make it out, we see clips of Pat McAfee from the Pat McAfee Show. He's talking about War Games, and he's saying he won't be on NXT this week. He said he's going to be at home watching, cheering on his boys. Adam Cole and the Undisputed Era are in the ring. He says, "Boys and girls, do we look dead to you?" He said, "Pat McAfee's group said they killed the Undisputed Era and took over this show. We've heard that over and over before." He said, "I'll give you credit for giving us a taste of our own medicine, but you do not know who you're dealing with here." And once again, Undisputed Era is going to have to prove who the hell we are. And Adam says, Pat, I wish you were here, but you're a giant coward, so you're not. He said, the only thing I'm going to enjoy more than last week and kicking you in the face is in 2 weeks when we are locked in a cage together in the match that Undisputed Era made famous in NXT, a match that Undisputed Era is undefeated in. That's War Games. He said that Pat McAfee and his boys picked Pete Dunne to fight tonight, but Pete Dunne does not know who he's going to fight from the Undisputed Era tonight. To this point, Kyle O'Reilly pops in and says, you saw Halloween Havoc. Everyone did. I need to fight Pete Dunne tonight. And Adam Cole says he likes this. He likes angry Kyle O'Reilly. He said Pete Dunne is going to have to fight an angry Kyle O'Reilly. He says this while Kyle O'Reilly is standing there looking at the camera with a mixture of being tired and being sad. There were a lot of emotions there. Anger was certainly not one of the emotions. So what we're going to have is we're going to have Pete Dunne and Kyle O'Reilly tonight, and it's going to be for the War Games advantage. So for War Games, it's two teams of four. Two people start in the ring. So the other three are locked in a little cage by the entrance ramp, and every so often they release one person from either team. So you start with a good guy and a bad guy. The advantage determines whether the next person out is going to be a good guy or a bad guy. So if I'm the bad guy and I'm fighting you, either one of your friends is going to come out and help you or one of my friends is going to come out and help me. Traditionally, in these kinds of matches, it makes more sense for the bad guys to have the advantage because then my friend comes out, helps me beat you up, and then your friend has to come out and even the odds, and your good guys or your baby faces are fighting from underneath. It creates more drama. So it would make sense that the bad guys, the McAfee boys, would have the advantage here. It also makes sense that Pete Dunne, in his first singles match back, would win. That would all make sense. So, we're going to have that match tonight. We're backstage, and Candice LeRae is with Raquel Gonzalez and Dakota Kai. I believe the interviewer's name is Mackenzie, is trying to talk to them, and Candice makes her stand over to the side for a second and talks to Dakota and Raquel, asks them if they're both in, and they say they're both in. And so Candice essentially announces there that Toni Storm is joining her War Games team with Dakota and Raquel. And Toni just says that she said that you were going to see a whole new Toni. And that's where I wrote that this is lazy. So Toni Storm comes back to NXT, right? And she shows up to essentially put Io Shirai on notice that she's, one, she's back in NXT, and two, she's coming for the women's title. So, she does that, and then she essentially rubs up against the Candice LeRae, Dakota Kai, Raquel Gonzalez group. She loses one or two matches. She feels a lot less important in storyline because she can't win a match and doesn't bring her friends out to back her up. So she makes no advancement towards the women's title whatsoever. In fact, she hurts her status a little bit, again, in storyline by losing and not having much of an impact. And so instead of maybe challenging Rhea Ripley or even, hell, going out and challenging Io Shirai, because Io Shirai is the kind of champion that if you just challenge her, she will probably accept. So at War Games, you could have gone out and said, Io, you don't have a match. I want to fight you at War Games and get yourself the title match that you were interested in at first. But instead of doing that, she waits until the perfect moment to come out to make it look like she's helping Ember Moon without Dakota, Candice, and Raquel knowing that she's helping, and then attacks Ember Moon, joins the group. The group has to decide whether they're going to let you in because you didn't tell them beforehand. And now at War Games, instead of a one-on-one title match, you're going to be in a War Games team with a bunch of women that, in storyline, talk a big game but cannot win big matches. War Games is a pretty big match. And you're going to go against, it looks like, Rhea Ripley, probably Io Shirai, Ember Moon, and somebody else. So you've essentially worked yourself out of a championship match and into a match that ultimately isn't going to mean anything except that you're probably going to lose, which is going to hurt your chances to get a title match in the first place. See, this is the problem with debuting somebody like Toni Storm back in NXT and having her aim directly at Io Shirai, because she loses these matches, she doesn't feel as important, and now her attention is completely diverted. Like, to a point, yes, if your team wins, your team beat the women's champion, but there's three other women that were responsible for that win, which muddies the waters even further. There was a much easier path here to get to Io Shirai in storyline. So either you didn't think of that, which makes you look not the smartest, or you just didn't care, which doesn't make sense for how you debuted. So as of now, there is no stated reason why Toni Storm is with these women who are bad guys who can't win big matches. She just is. Like with Dakota Kai last year, she turned on her team because they essentially acted like they didn't want her. She was like a last-minute replacement. She was in the team, but begrudgingly. And then frustration boiled over, and she attacked her own teammates. She attacked Tegan Nox, her former best friend, and slammed her knee a bunch of times in the cage door. Like, that makes a lot of sense for a heel turn of turning into a bad guy. That makes sense to me because frustrations had boiled over with her own team, and she hadn't set her eyes on the women's title, at least hadn't stated it yet. This way, it seems like we just needed somebody on the bad guy team to fill out the bad guy team, and so we just had Toni Storm do it just because that's what we needed to happen. And that's why I say it's lazy. Maybe we find out more next week, but I don't know what we're going to find out in the next week of build-up before the show happens, where it's going to justify turning into a bad guy and not going after the title. You can turn to a bad guy and start using underhanded techniques and tactics, but you would think that you would want to do it to the women's champion who did not have a match at the pay-per-view. That would have made more sense, but we need a War Games match, so we have to shuffle some things around. Sure, fine. We cut back to the ring, and Kevin Owens is in the ring for the Kevin Owens show. It's really good to see Kevin back in an NXT ring. I didn't think we were going to get a Kevin Owens show. This is awesome. And the guest this week is the North American champion, Leon Ruff. Leon is dressed in like a dress shirt, dress pants, dress shoes. Looks good in the suit. Doesn't look as skinny, I guess. Looks good in the suit without a jacket. It's, at this point, it occurred to me that like old Kevin Owens would absolutely just have beaten the hell out of Leon Ruff. This is not old Kevin Owens, but I'm always on edge when Kevin is talking to like a nice person, because I'm used to the Kevin Owens that would be friends with people for a while and act friendly and then attack them. And so it, especially on talk show segments, it makes me think every time that that's what he's going to do. But he didn't. Ruff said that he's wanted to be a WWE superstar his whole life. He signed his contract about 7 weeks ago. WWE loves stuff like this. Now, here's the thing. I don't know if Leon Ruff's dream his whole life has been to be in the WWE. I don't know. A lot of people you will hear talk about growing up watching WWE, and they really loved it, and they dreamed about being a WWE superstar. And that's true. But WWE especially likes to do it now, and especially on NXT, because AEW is a thing. So WWE really doesn't have to worry about Impact. Impact is still trying to figure its stuff out. Like, they pay people on time now, and that's great, but they're not in a Monday Night War with Raw anymore. That's great, but their product is still, you love it or you hate it. So WWE never really had to worry about Impact. And so AEW comes along, and the problem for WWE is that AEW is an alternative. It's the equivalent to what WCW was in the 90s, more so than the 83 weeks that Eric Bischoff is still making money off of with his podcast with Conrad, more than WCW's dominance over WWE for that time. The important thing about the Monday Night Wars that they do not tell you is not that WWE pulled itself up by its bootstraps and won the war. It's that WCW was an alternative. So if you were in the WWE and Vince randomly decided he didn't like you anymore, or he got bored with you, or creative, despite having, I don't know how many writers, had nothing for you, which you would think would be the whole point of having a creative team, but that whole creative team just has nothing for you. If all of those things happen, or if, say, during a pandemic you were released despite that company releasing you, making more money over that time than they ever had in the history of their company, just to like pull a random example, if any of that were to happen to you, you had a place to go. You had a WCW to go to. Now, I don't know if a lot of people preferred WCW in terms of the men and women wrestling. I don't know how many people preferred being in WCW. I know that there were some. But the important thing is that there was somewhere else to go. WWE does not like that there is somewhere else to go. WWE wants to be the only wrestling company. They want to be the biggest one. They also want a monopoly. That's why they bought up all the territories. That's why they put themselves on a streaming network by themselves. That's why they buy other companies. They want to be the be-all, end-all. Because to the people behind WWE, of course your dream was to be in WWE. What else would your dream be if you are a fan of wrestling or a fan of entertainment? Of course your dream is to be in WWE. But now, if I were an up-and-coming wrestler or manager or something, my two choices would be NXT and AEW. And I understand you make more money on the main roster than you do in NXT. I don't know what the pay difference is, but if I'm able to make a comfortable living for myself, like a Ciampa does, then why would I want to go to the main roster? I do not see an advantage. I saw on Twitter that people were discussing it, and they were saying, well, not only more money, but you get a chance to work with the AJ Styles, the Drew McIntyres, the Roman Reigns, the Seth Rollins, the Rey Mysterios, the Dolph Zigglers. You get to work with world-class people. And in theory, that is true. If I come to the main roster and they really like me and want to get behind me and push me to the moon, then yes, I will get to work with those people. But it's just as likely that I'm going to be an EC3 where they just don't care, they don't take time to learn to know who I am, and then I'm just in backstage funny segments. Or I'm an R-Truth where everybody gives R-Truth credit for how funny he is in creating something out of nothing. And I agree, he is very funny and he's able to create something out of nothing. But never forget that this is a man who is the NWA champion in NWA TNA. He was a legit wrestler and a really good promo. And he was going to face John Cena at, I believe, Capital Punishment in around 2011 for the WWE title. It was his only shot at that title. And now they like to make jokes about Little Jimmy. He has essentially an imaginary friend named Little Jimmy. And that always makes me mad because that's not what Little Jimmy was when R-Truth came up with it. Little Jimmy was making fun of John Cena. R-Truth was essentially like a little bit of a psycho. He was losing his marbles a bit. And he was saying that Little Jimmy in the crowd is going to be cheering for you, but when I beat you, Little Jimmy is going to be crying. It was a very serious, excellent, excellent promo that R-Truth cut. And rather than trying to go anywhere with that momentum, he had a match with John Cena. Of course, he lost. But instead of doing anything with that momentum, they took R-Truth, who is very good in the ring. He's a very good talker. He's great at coming up with ideas and making something out of nothing. They took this person who's extraordinarily talented and they pigeonholed him into a character that's stupid. His whole thing was that he was stupid. He comes out in matches and thinks that they're ladder matches. When they're not, he gets all the way to the top of the ladder, says, "My bad." He comes out with Brock Lesnar in the ring and Paul Heyman, and he says, "I'm going to throw you over the top rope, Paul Heyman." While he made that funny, never forget that the joke of that story is, haha, R-Truth is so stupid, he thought Paul Heyman was in the Royal Rumble. And it's hard because he's entertaining and he's certainly not going to be the WWE champion, but I think that there is something between WWE champion and funny black guy who does fun stuff because, oh, look how stupid he is. I think that there's something in the middle of those two things. I do not begrudge R-Truth one bit, for getting paid for being entertaining as hell and doing the best with what he's got. Who I do blame is all of the white people in power in WWE who saw this very talented black guy and thought that the best thing to do with him was to make him an idiot. And it infuriates me. It really rubs me the wrong way every time, and I don't hear a lot of people talking about it, and it hasn't really come up on this show, but you took this very, very, very extremely talented black guy who had a great pedigree of wrestling, and you made him just a sideshow and got to laugh at how stupid he was. And you hear all the time that Vince McMahon loves R-Truth. I bet he does. I just bet he does. And the thing is, that is just as likely to happen to me on the main roster as is I get to face AJ Styles and Drew McIntyre and Roman Reigns and Sheamus and Dawg. That's just as likely. So I'm going to go to NXT or AEW. So to counteract that, WWE sells you on their bigger than life. They have the biggest characters, and all of their superstars always wanted to be WWE superstars. Nobody wanted to be a WCW superstar. Certainly nobody wants to be an AEW superstar. We want to be WWE superstars. I don't know if Leon Ruff grew up wanting to be specifically a WWE superstar, but he's here now. He's the North American champion. And Leon says he wants to be an inspiration around the world to people like him. Kevin says he likes what Leon is saying, but he says you need to say it with more conviction. There's people in the back right now that, if they smell weakness, are going to come after you. And as he's talking, Leon kind of gets up and Kevin says, you won this North American title. And Leon says, I did. And he kicks a chair and he says, I did. He gets pumped up because what you want in an inspiration is that the inspiration needs to be coached, because that is inspirational. Kevin says that he's done this before. He fixes the chair and he starts counting down from, he said, if you mention somebody, he's probably back there yelling from the hit his music. He says, 3, 2, 1, I've been here before. And there's a silence and he says, oh, I guess not. But then Johnny's music hits. Johnny's coming out. He says, are you saying that you beat Johnny Gargano? Is this a prank show? Is Ashton Kutcher going to come out of one of these pods? Kevin, low into the mic, says, that was a timely reference. Johnny says, thank you. Because Johnny and Kevin together are great. Didn't know that. As Johnny is talking, Kevin brings another chair into the ring. He says, I brought a chair because I'm a good host. Johnny throws the chair out, says, I don't want one. Before he can turn back around, Kevin has grabbed another chair. Johnny said, I said I didn't want a chair. Kevin says, oh, this one isn't for you. He says, well, who's it for? Kevin says, it's just a hunch. Go ahead. So Johnny is saying that you didn't beat me. The only reason you won is because of that fake arrow-shooting idiot, Damian Priest. And Kevin says, I just told you what happens. If you say someone's name, they come out. And what do you know? Damian Priest, music hits. And he says, what do you know? It's Johnny here complaining again about losing. And Damian gets in the ring and he says, you're going to have to face the reality that you lost. And Damian says, but turning to Leon Ruff, before we do all this, he says, I actually never got a rematch from the North American title. He says, in your moment of toughness last week, you said that you would defend it against both of us. And Kevin says, man, I wish Teddy Long were here. Because if Teddy Long were here, he would come out and he'd make a triple threat match. I wish there were somebody in NXT like Teddy Long. And he counts nothing. He says, oh, I guess you guys don't have one of those? They're like, no, not really. And then William Regal's music hits. He says, in 2 weeks at War Games, we're going to have a triple threat match. Johnny Gargano, Damian Priest, and Leon Ruff for the North American title. Before he walks to the back, he rolls his eyes and says, playa. Because William Regal is also very funny. Don't ever forget it. We have a Shotzi Blackheart vignette. It's the same thing as last week. She's like in a warehouse spitting platitudes while operating a chainsaw. I saved you a lot of time. We cut to the ring, and I like Shotzi. It just meant nothing, and you didn't need to hear it, so here we are. So we cut to the ring, and Rhea is there. She says that Io Shirai is one of the toughest people that she has ever been in the ring with. She said after last week, there's been some speculation from her friends, her family, the people in the back, the fans about what's next for Rhea Ripley. She said, I guess you guys have a reason for that, that hug after the match, but that hug was nothing but respect. She said, don't make any mistake, it wasn't any kind of sending off party. I am here to stay, and I am focused on one thing. That's the women's title. Before she can get all that out, she's interrupted again by Candice LeRae and Toni Storm because we haven't seen enough of them yet on the show. This is funny because at this point, Candice makes fun of Rhea for not getting the job done and winning the title despite, before that match, Candice losing consecutive title matches to Io Shirai. Candice says that there's a couple differences between her and Rhea. One, Io had to have help both times she won against me. And I understand she's just a bad guy making excuses, and that's absolutely good. I would, for the record, like to point out that at Halloween Havoc, Shotzi Blackheart interfered, but only to pull the ghost face person that was helping Candice. And I don't remember what happened in their last match, but I imagine something similar to that. She said, so Io needed help, but she beat you all by herself. And she said, and the other difference is that you talk and talk and talk, but you can't get the job done. Pot Kettle, you've gotten the job done double the amount of times, or haven't gotten it done double the amount of times recently that Rhea has. And as she's saying that, Dakota Kai comes out with Raquel Gonzalez, and Raquel Gonzalez has Io Shirai on her shoulder, I guess knocked out. So they put Io down, and the three of them, Raquel's still outside, the other three surround the ring. And again, they're idiots because Rhea just runs and jumps out of the ring before they can get to her. Rhea takes out Raquel, and she's taking it to Dakota and Candice and all them before the numbers game eventually takes over. She does pretty well against the three of them. It's kind of funny. And so they've taken out Io, they take out Rhea Ripley. So we're going to have Io Shirai and Rhea Ripley on the War Games team, presumably also Ember Moon. So we've got Ember Moon, Io Shirai, Rhea Ripley. I'm trying to think of who the other person would be. Huh. It feels like I should know. And you're yelling it at me because this is one of those things where you know a thing that I don't know and I can't think of it in time. And that's, you know what? That's fine. Because we have Raquel Gonzalez, Dakota Kai, Candice LeRae, and Toni Storm. Team, we can't get it done. And we have Io Shirai, Rhea Ripley, Ember Moon, and somebody else as our good guy team. We haven't seen our good guy team form yet. This show was very much about establishing the bad guy team. I think they did a good job of that. All the things that I mentioned about Candice definitely not getting the job done, I do have some problems with Candice being the one to send this message. I wish that Toni had been the head of the team because Toni's the only one that hasn't lost in big matches, and I feel like it would have been more impactful if Toni had taken over the team. I don't know how well Candice works as the ringleader yet. I mean, they took out the women's champion, so I guess it's not all bad, but it left some stuff to be desired. Maybe we'll get some more out of it next week when we see who our finalized good guy team is, and we can kind of go from there. So Candice and Johnny are leaving with Indy Hartwell, and they get in their car, and in the back behind Johnny is Ghostface. And then the announcers have to act like they didn't know that there were two Ghostfaces. They have to act like they thought that that same Ghostface came out to help Johnny and then to help Candice at Halloween Havoc. Of course, there are two Ghostfaces. It's Austin Theory. It's the one person that hasn't been on TV since Ghostface started showing up. And the funny part about this is that at some point, they're going to have Austin Theory take off the Ghostface mask the same way Indy Hartwell did. Except with Indy Hartwell, it was funny because they treated it like a surprise when it absolutely wasn't. This one's going to be even funnier because they've held on to it for weeks now as if it's a surprise. And it's still not. And it's just going to be funny to see, oh yeah, it's Austin. I know. He doesn't have to wear the stupid ghost face thing anymore. That's good for him. So, we have Kyle O'Reilly versus Pete Dunne in our main event. This is going to be a ladder match, and the winner's team gets the advantage in the men's War Games match. We have an excellent match. They get a lot of time. Kyle O'Reilly's excellent. Pete Dunne's excellent. It's great to see him back. O'Reilly was about to win. He's on the ladder, and then a mystery man in a hoodie and a mask that is absolutely Pat McAfee tips over that ladder, and then Pete Dunne ends up winning to get the advantage for Wargame. That's how it should be. The bad guys should have the advantage. It makes for a better match. If you have two good guys beating up a bad guy, the bad guy just looks like an idiot. If you have two bad guys beating up a good guy, you can get sympathy on that good guy. Makes sense. So that means we have one more week to prepare for War Games. So it looks like it's going to be a pretty good card coming up. We have, obviously, the men's War Games and the women's War Games match. We have Leon Ruff defending the North American title against Damian Priest and Johnny. I hope that Leon Ruff doesn't look like a dork in that match like he has in the other ones, but we'll see. I don't know if we're going to have anything with the NXT title. I'm not sure if Finn's going to be ready to go yet or not. So we'll have to see there. But we have a pretty good show shaping up so far, and takeovers are almost always good. So that's always going to be a positive for me. So I will be back next week at the regular time this time to talk with you about NXT. Now, for the time being, that means that my time is just about up. Again, you can always find me on Twitter. I am at ZachNXT. That's at ZachNXT. We're always talking fun stuff over there. In the meantime, thank you very much for listening. I have been Zachary Smith. You have been a fantastic audience, and thank you for listening.